Earlier in the year, we were delighted to feature the legend, it is Christine Webber, talking about the importance of obviously coping with lack of sunlight and lack of vitamin D and a variety of other things. Well, the great news is she's back today to actually focus very much in her expertise as a psychotherapist and relationship expert extraordinaire on the secrets to a long-lasting relationship with, indeed, a former SAS soldier and chief training officer for the Tough Mudder event. That would be Nigel Thomas. Christine and Nigel, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, this is an interesting combination that I wasn't expecting, Christine. But, you know, if it works, we did a feature on Tough Mudder a couple of years ago, and it was just beginning to sort of open up on this whole scenario. But apparently, one in five Brits don't make an effort to be romantic beyond Valentine's Day, yet two-thirds of couples want to improve the quality of their relationship. So, Christine, to you first, how can actually this kind of event with Tough Mudder possibly improve that side of things? Or is it just a case of, you know, if you go through heck and high water together, you'll bond despite the problems?
Well, I think you may have something there, Alex, actually. But one of the things in this Tough Mudder research, which was commissioned for Valentine's Day, which I thought particularly sad, was that almost a third of people said they couldn't remember when they saw their partner in a fresh light. Now, if you just think about that for a moment, how dull is that?
It's like watching the same TV program again and again and again and again.
Well, it is,
constant,
isn't it?
Repeats.
And so one in ten people said that their relationship is more like brother and sister than, you know, sort of swinging from the chandeliers twice nightly. So, I mean, we know certain things, actually. We know that people feel better about themselves when they exercise more. We know that when you do get more active, that you generate more feel-good chemicals in your body called endorphins. And we also know that when people do things together, when they, you know, not at the other end of a phone screen or a computer screen, but when they're actually physically together as a couple, you know, they tend to bond more and produce more of this, another feel-good and bonding chemical and hormone called oxytocin. So I think this is a sort of win-win situation. You know, whether you take up dancing together because you watched it on Strictly Come Dancing, or you go to the gym together, or you walk on Sundays, you know, or you just take the dog out together, there is a challenge for you, and to do it together. And it was very interesting that in the survey, 83% of adults want to commit to spend more quality time with their partners. And 70% of people say that when they do spend that time together, things hot up in the bedroom.
Oh, well, I mean, allowing for who dares wins, clearly that's a different line entirely. But Nigel, I have to ask you, as you're about to head up to Everest to celebrate, obviously, a fairly significant birthday from that point of view, will you be taking your partner with you to say, come on, love, let's go up to Everest together?
No, it's a good 3-month break.
Ah, well, okay, let's move on, though. Back in 2010, I recall the early press releases were coming out with respect to Tough Mudder, and the usual line was, it's never going to last, etc. But here we are. I mean, over a million inspiring participants worldwide have actually taken part in this whole thing. For people who might be listening to this and thinking, a psychotherapist, Tough Mudder, what's the connection with respect to that? We've heard from Christine with respect to, obviously, the relationship side of things, etc. But tell us a bit about Tough Mudder and the toughest event on the planet.
Well, it's Tough Mudder is an event that covers 10 or 12 miles. And it's an obstacle event, a number of obstacles along the route. Tends to be a personal challenge for the individuals. It's a test of mental toughness and physical endurance.
I'm thinking, Christine, from Harley Street to Tough Mudder, it's something which certainly I can see not just major motion picture, but major motion picture awards going on in this particular instance. You touched base on the oxytocin side of things from that point of view. I mean, for folk who might be listening to this thinking, well, this is all very good, but I really don't fancy taking up extreme sports just to keep the relationship sort of going from that point of view. Are there slightly more basic ways in which we can kind of learn to appreciate in a new and shall we say, refreshing style? Because ultimately it is that.
Yes, I mean, I've got some tips here which might help keep the spark alive for people. I mean, one thing is, whatever you do on Valentine's Day, I think you should regard it as the first day of the romantic year. It's a bit like New Year's Day with knobs on, really. Have a chat with your partner, make some new romantic year resolutions to keep your love and passion fresh throughout the year.
So celebrating the feast of the Valentine's Day massacre with Al Capone, it's not really an option, is it? No.
What a cynic you are. You're making my life very difficult, you know. And my second tip is get sweaty together. This is where Tough Mudder comes in. Get sweaty together in an unusual way. And, you know, that could be just walking the dog briskly. It could be playing a game of football. It could be dancing, whatever. But this does help you both feel better, and it is something you can do together. And then another idea I had is, instead of spending a fortune on a one-off meal on Valentine's Day, where, frankly, you know, so much of that is a rip-off, isn't it? Why not just go and have a cheap and cheerful pub meal and donate what you would have spent in the Spawncy restaurant to a charity? Because, you know, one of the planks of happiness is doing stuff for other people, as we're seeing with the floods around the country and everything. You know, where communities are coming together, they feel better about the community, about themselves. And I think that's something that couples need to remember too. You can also take a trip down memory lane with your partner. Look at some old pictures and kind of remember the feelings you had when you first used to date and he'd come around the corner and you think, oh, that's my man, you know. Take a trip there and just rekindle that. And those sort of things, I think, can really help to keep your romance and the surprise, if you like, alive, because you don't want to become like brother and sister, do you? But you've got a brother and sister. You want your partner to be something else.
Yes, and don't get me started on the possible psychotherapy difficulties of relationships in that sort of situation, because that's a whole new thing, which I'm not going to go into.
No,
exactly.
Perhaps you better not.
Precisely.
No.
Nigel, back to yourself again. When you're sort of obviously talking about relationships, I mean, do you see couples doing the Tough Mudder exercise together? I mean, is it something that people bond, or is it a case of, you know, one partner will actually sort of stand back and watch the other actually go for it and actually show support from the sides?
I think you get both sides of it. We see a huge amount of couples and couples in groups as well. I'm currently training a group of ladies from the local village, and I trained their partners last year, who have entered again this year. But, you know, they've all got partners, whether married or just boyfriend, girlfriend. And it's really fascinating. You see them, you know, building up the fitness in one way or another, and then taking part in the event itself, getting over the obstacles. And the teamwork and the camaraderie that they feel at the end, I always like to stand at the end of the event and just watch the people coming through, and just the joy that they've, you know, succeeded successfully in something that they never thought that they would. And just, yeah, it just builds a bond, as Christine was saying. It's it can be quite dull and boring, you know, when couples meet at first, it's all, you know, it's all sparks and it's fantastic. And then where does it go? And it's only down to us as individuals and our lack of imagination. And I think that's where the Tough Mudder community comes into it.
You see, Nigel, I can sense it's only going to be a matter of time before you actually have motorcycling on Everest. You know, that's going to be your next thing. You've got your motorcycle passion. You've got your mountaineering skills. I can see this coming out and do your feature, and Christine will have to talk about the essence of that, and that'll get the oxytocin
flowing. I do like to be different.
Yeah, well, very much so. It's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with you fine folk today. A reminder, of course, the website is www.toughmudder.co.uk. And, of course, Christine has her very own website, I believe, which is a top sort of scenario. Psychotherapist, Rachel, relationship expert extraordinaire. A whole heap of other goodies from that. Would you like to share that with us as well, Christine?
Well, it's just ChristineWeber.com.
Thank
you for mentioning it.
You say just ChristineWeber.com. It's critical that goes through that whole system. We have two final questions for you, Christine. You know, I think, hopefully, what they are. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today?
You know you're my favourite, Alex. So what more can I say?
I think it's only a matter of time before you come up to Lincoln and actually speak to our students and listeners in person, really.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Yeah. And the next critical question is, can we look forward to hopefully connecting with you again in the not-too-distant future?
Well, I very much hope so.
And Nigel keeping very quiet there. you're off on your motorbike, so actually sort of work on that thing.
No, it'd be good to meet yourself, Alex, up in Bunton Hall Kettering.
When we get up there. Do you know, I am being asked by a couple of people to actually arrange an outside broadcast and a report on a Tough Mudder event. I'm hesitant at present, but I might just...
Come along. Yeah, we don't bite.
Well, there we are. Right, Christine Weber and Nigel Thomas, many thanks indeed.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
just a drop of water in an endless sea. All we do crumbles to the ground, though we refuse to see. Dust in the wind, all we are is dust in.
Pleasant ditty there from Kansas, and Dust in the Wind. Although it has to be said, probably actually like Brian May's version as well that he put together. We might put that into play systems for next week. Okay, William Sitwell, as yet not around, which means we might well be going off to Jonathan Pollinger to find out more about the 2014 Cheltenham Festival. But Ed Wellman's arrived. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Alex. And would this be an okay moment for me to mention something for next week?
Well, of course.
Well, the University of Lincoln Islamic Society are holding their annual Discover Islam Week. And I was chatting to Jamil and Hassan and Shabina and the guys from the Islamic Society yesterday, and coming up on Siren tomorrow on Breakfast and again on Sunday Breakfast, we're going to be looking at some of the events that are on around about Lincoln. It's the University Islamic Society organising it, but it's for the whole of Lincoln. And keep an eye on sirenonline.co.uk because we're going to put all up there.
Parsec, a whole new show exploring sci-fi and science fiction in all its manifestations.
What does the future sound like?
Coming on Sunday for Siren 107.3 FM.
What does the future sound like?
The future will be silent.
What does the future sound like?
With your pilots Dave Milling and Alex Leftuke. And a positive galaxy of co-presentational stars.
The future will be silent.
I should have known better to lie to one as beautiful as you. Yeah, I should have known better to take a chance on ever losing you. But I thought you'd understand.
And are we ready for the mix? I take it that's a yes, though.
Einstein, who made Criticism and Foodie Delights, and the author of A History of Food in 100 Recipes. Quite clearly a question of quality personified. It's William Sitwell on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Oh, And I bet if he actually was talking to the US ambassador, he would have also broken into, perhaps not. William Sitwell, good morning. How are we?
Good morning.
From Jim Diamond to a diamond bloke, what's not to appreciate about that one, eh? Amazing. So, did you go down a storm, and where are you in Hammersmith at present?
I'm not right now I'm at Euston Station, having hot-footed it back from a speech I made last night to 200 farmers in Whittlebury, Northamptonshire.
Okay.
Actually, having hot-footed it there from a speech to a couple of hundred people at the US Ambassador's residence in Regent's Park.
Nice.
Celebrating California's amazing ingredients, of which you can read in the latest issue of Waitrose Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
We basically teamed up with the state of California to look at the wine they produce. And I said to a couple of members of my team, look, we need to do a thing about a great Californian ingredients are, and they didn't believe me, so I had to send them out there. And then I said, right, we need to do a piece on how great the wine is, and they didn't quite believe me, so they had to stay on and sip the wine. But California is an amazing place for ingredients, great farming, you know, from pistachios to almonds to dates, and of course it has some of the world's greatest wines. So some Californian producers and various chefs, famous chef Drew Baker, cooking with some Alaska salmon. So we all gathered last night, you know, toasting each other and getting toasted.
You know, we should have put you in touch with Phil Linus and some of our other Los Angeles and California-based correspondents. You know, we've got them in San Diego, we've got them in the LA itself, etc. We'll have to coordinate this, you know, and we'll get that sorted. But meanwhile, William, if you don't mind, I think Ed this morning has got another little campaign he'd like to introduce. This is not a juicing thing, but it's an issue he actually has, which he thinks you might have at least a certain simpatico with, if not sort of downright irritation. Anyway,
yeah,
Ed.
It follows on for the many weeks on coleslaw, but last night I found myself eating a chicken Kiev.
Oh, dear.
I'm just wondering what the heck was inside it.
What is
a chicken Kiev? I mean, can you have a good one, or is it just essentially always going to be a poor experience?
It's been burning for some time.
I love chicken Kiev.
Oh, do you,
sir? I won't hear the good name of the Kiev chicken.
Well, you see,
even on this show.
I'd heard awful things about them.
Give him a reply, Ed. Give him a say.
I'm sorry.
He's just getting into the swing of things now.
Let me tell you what's in the chicken Kiev, right? Number one, chicken. Okay? Number two, garlic, parsley and butter. And that's all it is, really, isn't it? You know, you inject your garlic butter into your chicken. Now, of course, a genuine chicken Kiev is made up of chicken breasts pressed together with the filling and then dipped in breadcrumbs and fried or grilled or baked. You often get the ones from supermarkets which are often sort of more
pasty,
processed chicken. They've sort of been mushed up and glued together.
That's the problem, isn't it? Yes.
The thing is, I have a bit of a penchant for chicken Kievs. We eat them quite a lot at home. Some supermarkets do them better than others, but I think actually if you're going to eat a ready meal, I think that popping a chicken Kiev in the oven, having it with a bit of mash, a bit of salad, a bit of broccoli, a bit of Dijon mustard, you know, a little glass of, who knows, Californian Viognier, you know, I mean, what's, you know, your campaign, I'm sorry, but it's faltered.
It's faltered. I'm going to change it. I'm going to change it into Love the Kiev campaign.
Love the Kiev.
I am going to investigate this week at making my own. I'll find a recipe, and I may well bring it into this programme next week, and we'll have a live Ed Kiev chicken taste test thing go.
The Kiev Ed.
It's a good example of a kind of classic 70s dish that, when done well, is absolutely terrific. Very few people bother to make them at home, but it's good, and I find that my kids love them, you know, and also it's quite fun, you know, the fact that it squirts out, preferably not onto your tie.
Use a bib. I find that essential, actually. It may look a little bit odd, but if you have a bib or a napkin, it's much more important. It's one of those areas where, for eating a chicken Kiev, for exactly the reason you've mentioned there, William, putting the napkin on your lap is not the sensible idea. It's a bit like if you have a runny fried egg sandwich. That's also, a bib is essential for that as well. Anyway, that's just my little advice, but maybe that's just so northern. You know, it could just be that. I don't know. William, it's been wonderful as ever. I mean, from California from the American ambassador. Did they treat you well, and did they actually offer you a certain Ferrero Rocher, or did they just say no? It was the ambassador's favourite.
Well, you know, they were spoiling me. Let's put it
as that. Yes. There are certain listeners for this very programme who probably are too young to even remember that. Never mind. I presume you got the email about maybe, just maybe, being able to squeeze us in the Lincoln-inspired festival in May. Have you seen that as yet?
So you want to broadcast conversation on a kind of level of admin?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just award-winning radio. Yeah. Come on, guys. Come on. You're asking me to check my diary live on air.
We don't say we want a response. I'm just sort of saying, you know, it's what we call the DVD extra, you know, or as Phil Leonis would say, the production meeting on air. It's fantastic. Anyway, I'll just leave that for the moment. You know, don't worry. We've got the Cheltenham Festival to come up with Jonathan Pollinger shortly. Ed, as you prepare for the Chicken Kiev, of course, we could actually take it down to London, actually, because, you know, next week we'll be heading down there. So, you know, it's a thought.
Yeah.
Are you in London next week, William?
Again.
On the Friday?
Anywhere else now.
What kind of radio is this? You know, live diary.
It's what we call pushing those boundaries. Anyway, let's go back to the script as neatly rehearsed. Over to you, Ed Wellman.
This Thursday morning, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on Siren FM Breakfast today, William?
Indeed, yeah.
And can we look forward to connecting with you again next Thursday morning? Please, sir, thank you.
I believe that could happen.
Thank you.
And if you're wondering where Rachel is, she's lost her voice. Katie's in Birmingham, still listening to the show. Well done, Katie. Well, that's it, really. I mean, we just carry on in fun times. Time to press a button.
Yeah. Katie's got to go and get a bit more extra voice coaching, hasn't she? Back in Birmingham.
There you have it. White horses, let me ride away to my world of dreams so far away. Let me run to the sun, to a world my heart can understand. Well, it carries a certain sense of calm and peace and happiness around the whole thing. Jackie and White Horses there, which you probably might get the occasional White Horse at the festival that everybody loves in terms of equine matters. It's only a matter of weeks away now. Good heavens, it's amazing. It just comes around so quickly. And certainly our friends from the Emerald Isle, they do love the old joys of Cheltenham. And to talk about that and more, we're delighted to welcome making his debut on the whole production, and indeed is recommended, Ed, by the legend that is Minty Steed, the one and only Jonathan Pollinger. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning, Alex.
Good to connect with your good self. Let's just set the scene. What involvement do you actually have professionally, of course, with the 2014 Cheltenham Festival? What kind of package do you provide?
Well, I publish a website called jpfestival.com, and through that we really try and provide as much information as possible around jump racing and in particular the festival. So obviously there are some tips on there, but we're not really a tipping site, so we try and do more than that. So really everything from where to stay, where to go after the races, even fashion tips and stuff like that. And we provide that via both sort of articles, and we also do a lot with video, both previews and reviews of the races.
Indeed. Look at it now. Welcome to jpfestival.com, jump racing commentary, Champion Hurdle 2014, a whole range of things from that point of view, which we'll talk about in a few seconds, because obviously there's a preview, actually, of the Grand National. Oh, my God, you see, time just scoots by. I mean, the Grand National 2014 weight's already published. That's astounding.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. Anyway, I'll introduce you to our co-presenter and associate, Ed Wellman, who's in the studio as well. Ed, have you ever been to the races?
Something I haven't done.
Unbelievable.
No, I know.
I was last at Cheltenham in the days of Best Mate and the wonderful Jim Lewis, who was actually there. And the sense of lines that we actually got there was phenomenal. We must go back to that. But, I mean, Cheltenham in particular, it's fair to say, Jonathan, is one of those areas where it's 4 days? It's 4 days or 5 days?
Yeah, four days.
And the whole town is literally, I mean, you think the Hay on Wye sort of festival is important, but this for horse racing lovers, and anybody who's actually just interested in some good, healthy outdoor activity, it is quite phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It is something that the whole town gets behind. I mean, and given the number of people that are there over the 4 days, I mean, that amounts to pretty close to 200,000 people. I mean, that's like not far off double the population of the normal size of the town, so it's a lot of extra people around, so that the town, you know, even if you kind of like want to avoid it, it would actually be quite hard to do so.
I'm looking at the photograph by Kerry Hendry of the Cheltenham Gold Cup, and a preview for, of course, aforementioned Cheltenham Gold Cup. Always hotly anticipated as an event. The race provides a test of class and stamina over 3 miles and 2 furlongs, as usual, run on the Friday. It's something where I think, obviously, I mentioned Best Mate tragically went up to the Great Horse Race course in the sky a wee while ago. But we've also had in recent years some phenomenal runners and riders at Cheltenham, to the extent that almost bookies might have said, well, let's give up. In fact, share with us the little tale, Jonathan, of where things have been going and what have been happening as far as the horse racing community is concerned with Cheltenham.
Yeah, I mean, I think this season, in terms of the Gold Cup, everybody's looking forward to seeing whether Bob's Worth, who won the race last year, can go in again. And indeed, he is favourite, so the bookies would certainly be concerned about that one. He had a bit of a poor comeback run at Haydock, but then put in an absolute storming race, finishing very fast to win in Ireland the Lexus Chase in December. And so that sort of cemented his position as favourite. But he's got quite an astonishing record at Cheltenham. There are sort of some horses that definitely warm to the place, and he's actually 5 out of 5 at Cheltenham. So every chance that he's gonna take centre stage on the Friday.
It leads up obviously to the Grand National, and then of course we have the other sort of races that are actually there. I mean, these are kind of intrinsic, I suppose, really crown jewel events to the sporting community. Do you feel as though in terms of the sense of excitement that race course goers love about the whole thing, that there is a sort of enthusiasm that will remain constant? Because let's face it, I mean, horse racing actually goes back not 100 to 200, 300 years really in terms of the actual history of the whole piece.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, steeplechasing's got an interesting origin where sort of lords of the manor used to literally race two of their, usually one horse against another, between two steeples, and that's where the origin of the word steeples comes from. So, it goes back an awful long way. But I think you used two really important words there that kind of like sum up the Great 4 Days in March, the excitement and enthusiasm. You know, that's sort of two words I think that encapsulate the whole event.
Okay, I had my first experience slightly late. I was fortunate enough. The trainer Jack Berry actually took me around a red car race course at one stage before I was thrown in on the deep end to cover the Royal Ascot event. So it's a nice, interesting shift from red car on the one hand through to Royal Ascot. But it has been a couple of years actually since I've been at the races in terms of various other things. But let's take Ed as a perfect example here. What should our first sort of experiences for Ed actually be? I mean, I'm thinking we might sort of liaise with our colleague Malcolm Tomlinson, get some example of commentary, but I mean, in your own professional advice, Jonathan, how should we actually sort of, you know, go through this procedure of introducing Ed Wellman, MA Community Radio holder and indeed top music teacher and key organist to the medium of racing?
I think, you know, you've got to go. I mean, might be sort of stating the obvious, but I wouldn't be sort of too worried in terms of, I don't know, studying or familiarising yourself with it. But I think the best approach would be go with along with somebody who knows something about the sport and just sort of take it as a day out, not just sort of necessarily just thinking about it from the horses out on the track, because I think there is just so much to enjoy at a day at the races. There's a lot of socialising going on. There's fresh air, as you mentioned before. You know, you can actually look at the horses both before and after the race. So it's obviously the centrepiece of it is the racing itself, but there is an awful lot else going on.
Tell me about the etiquette, Jonathan. Do I need to wear a hat?
No. German racing, I would say, is certainly more informal than flat racing. You mentioned Ascot, so there is no dress code as such at Cheltenham. I would just strongly advise people to dress for comfort and be very sort of wary of the conditions. So it can be pretty nippy in March. So certainly you might need to wrap up.
I've always personally found the flat cap, I'm holding it up by the right-hand side of the microphone now. We don't have the webcam on, but that's very useful. I mean, a flat cap is wonderful. It also sort of manages to successfully reinforce one's northern origins as well, which I think is quite good when you're civilising the South. So it's just a line for that. So, Jonathan, we can't let you go without maybe asking for some suggestions in terms of who you think are the favourites as far as the Cheltenham Festival is actually concerned. I mean, whether you want to go for the Gold Cup, whether you want to go for the Champion Hurdle, whatever you're actually looking for from that point of view. I mean, Hurricane Fly, I think, is mentioned. Champion Hurdle I mentioned as well for that. But where do you think people should maybe be thinking, if they were sort of, you know, considering having a little wager on same?
Yeah, well, we'll be doing, jpfestival.com will be doing some previewing in three of the restaurants at Cheltenham over all 4 days, so you might catch us there, and obviously things might sort of change between now and then, but at the moment, sort of putting my neck on the block, in the Champion Hurdle, I'd be very keen on the new one. The new one, the horse that won a race called the Neptune Novices Hurdle last year. And he's a sort of young, improving horse. Hurricane Fly, as you mentioned, is very much the established horse, winner of the race, tremendous winner last year. And now, you know, it's actually hard to know which one of those is going to start favourite. So either way, you'll sort of still get reasonable value both now and on the day. And in the Gold Cup, I'm quite keen on Q Card. There's quite a lot of sort of divergence of opinion amongst professionals and pundits on Q Card. Some people sort of saying he's got no chance, but I'm really quite keen on him. Again, he's a festival winner, won the Ryanair Chase last year, and there is a possibility he might go in the Ryanair again, but I think he's going to go for the Gold Cup, and he's a pretty good price. He's around about 8-1 and at the moment, so kind of one of the fancied ones, but not one of the strongly fancied ones, and be exciting to watch because he's a horse that tries to lead all the way, so you'll certainly get a good run for your money to see if he stays out in front and manages to keep on top going up that steep Cheltenham Hill at the end.
I do like the line that JPF Festival started its life in 1998 when Jonathan Pollinger emailed a few friends at work with tips for the Cheltenham Festival. And look where we are now, a star man on the Midweek Drive morning edition for Siren 107.3 FM.
That's it.
It's quality stuff. And the classic line, our mission, the mission of JPF Festival, to maximise the enjoyment, excitement and passion of jump racing. Objective, to provide the very best jump racing analysis, tips and reviews and strategy to grow a community of jump racing enthusiasts around jpffestival.com. There we are, you see. You can find out more about that by going to jpfestival.com as far as the website is concerned. Jonathan, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut on the Midweek Drive morning edition today?
Yeah, it's been great. Really enjoyed it, Alex. Thank you very much.
So can we look forward to hopefully connecting with you again in the very near future? And who knows, actually maybe connecting with you at one of the events as well when you're around.
Indeed, yeah, I'd love to do that. That'd be fantastic. Yeah.
Excellent. And just in case you thought we'd forgotten about the Grand National, well, of course.
Hello, this is Jane Clark, the historian at Aintree Racecourse, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive morning edition with Alex Leftchuk.
There we are, I see. Have you met Jane, by the way, in your sort of connections?
I haven't, no.
Oh, well, yeah. Very exciting. They're jumping in all sorts of ways there. Honestly, a whole lot of shaking going on. Jonathan Pollinger, we salute you. Take care and speak very soon.
Thanks, Alex. Bye.